At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of, 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 339. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, this is our first episode post-minor league season. So got another 2 weeks of regular season, but season is winding down.
Yeah, Triple A has in their final week, and we got a couple playoff games. But, yeah, it's definitely on the downswing. It's a little depressing in a way. Setting lineups today. Yeah, it was tough for some leagues, like just where they're done. Still set the lineup anyway, but it's still, oh man, this is almost over. So relieved in a way, looking forward to just having more time to really dive in on profiles of players rather than trying to keep up with everyday changes. So That'll be good. I am looking forward to that much.
Yeah, that always helps. And yeah, I meant to say double A, Triple A still has one more week, but no more double A. All single A's already done. And so we just got one more week of Triple A and then we'll be off to, but that's no more live looks for you and I, though. I have to drive. Nearest Triple A affiliate is Worcester for me, which is a 3-hour drive. What's the nearest Triple A affiliate for you?
I've got 2 hours. Gwinnett's an hour and a half and Charlotte's about two, but I just, Triple A, I don't really care that much. I've seen most of these guys at this point.
Exactly.
And we know who they are. So it's, I think there was a decent, I can't even remember, but there was like between the last 2 weeks of AAA, there was like a decent team down here, but I just looked at it and was, oh, Jacksonville was here and Charlotte last week, which is Davison De Los Santos and some of those. But like I've seen most of those guys, felt like it was pointless and I forgot who was in Gwinnett, but there was a decent team in Gwinnett. It was last week it was Buffalo, which is Toronto, which there was nobody. I was like, eh, don't care.
You don't want to see the return of Aurelvis Martinez?
Is he back now?
He is back, yeah. Okay. I came back a few games ago.
I totally missed that.
I totally forgot about him until I saw him like pop up in like the daily stats things. I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy exists. But, Triple A, it's like most teams I can go see. Like I just saw that come through Double A, so it's like maybe I'll go if it's like a rehab assignment or something like that or a big prospect that I couldn't see for some reason come through. Yeah, that's the only time I really ever go to AAA games. Plus, again, it's always been a 3+ hour drive for me. It used to be Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Now it's Worcester, Mass. So, yeah, it's still about the same driving time for me. And then the next closest, I don't even know what the closest would be. Probably like one of the New York or Pennsylvania teams. But, yeah, we get AFL coming up 6 weeks away from being out there at first pitch. Feels weird that it's only 6 weeks away. But yeah, season's winding down. But we got some good pitchers to talk about today. It's kind of a split here. We got some pitchers to talk about, major league pitchers, some younger guys that are all struggling. We talked a few weeks ago a lot of rookies that were doing well. So we'll talk about some younger arms. Some of these were rookies this year, one or two aren't, but five arms that are pitching poorly right now, but all have some intrigue. And then we got three up, three down with hitting prospects this week. So a pretty good mix of names. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. That's where all of our Dynasty prospect and FYPD rankings live. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. Let's start off today, Chris, with Taj Bradley. I tweeted out earlier today on Monday, or we're a day later in the week this week for our first episode, but the Taj Bradley kind of turnaround both ways. Like he started out the season like all right, and then became, you know, an ace for nine starts middle of the season. And then his last nine starts have been complete polar opposite. In nine starts from June 8th to July 25th, 55 innings, 0.82 ERA, 0.89 WHIP, a 22.3% K minus walk rate, and a 162 batting average against. But last nine starts for Bradley from July 31st till he had his last start yesterday or on Sunday, nine starts, 45 and two-thirds innings, 7.88 ERA, 164 WHIP, 13.8% K minus walk rate, and a 310 batting average against. Now, you know, 439 ERA this season, still has a nice 18.5% K minus walk rate, but just the issue with him, it's not really so much control, because he's been right around 8.5% walk rate, which is fine. That's like around league average walk rate. So that's fine. It's not really a control thing. This is more so a command thing. And when he misses his spots, he gets hit hard. Like he can throw strikes, but leaves that four seamer over the heart too much. You look at his quality of contact allowed, barrel rate around 11%, EV above 91 miles an hour, hard hit rate above 43%, all of which are in the bottom 17% of pitchers in baseball. So I think that's really the issue he's been having here, is just giving up too much hard contact. But I don't know, Chris, do you think this is just what he's going to be? Because he was pretty much the same way last year. Last year had a good K-minus walk rate of 19.5%, but again, just gave up too much hard contact and had pretty similar quality of contact allowed metrics last year to this year. I don't know. Do you have any faith that he's going to correct this issue and make that next step, or do you think this is what he is?
Man, I hope so. It was so fun to see that kind of breakout happen. 23 years old. There's still a bright future ahead here. Yeah, you know, I was trying to dig in and what happened exactly, and was there like a significant pitch mix change? And there really wasn't. This month in September, we are seeing him use the cutter at a significantly higher clip, almost double that usage from 18% up to 35% this month. And it's curbed the curveball usage a little bit too in the process, which is a little bit interesting because in September, it's really been cutter, four seam, splitter. Splitter's an inconsistent pitch. The four seam's just getting obliterated. Like at the end of the day, like that's been his issue. Is in August, the four seam had a 308 average against, which not great there. This month, it's a 364 batting average against with an 864 slug. I didn't mention it was a 538 slug in August. So still a pretty high clip there. A lot of hard contact allowed against it. Not a lot of whiffs. So I look at that pitch and say like, all right, so maybe the leading with the cutter is useful, but why ditch your curveball? And that's, I'm looking at it and wondering like he needs something like that curveball. Honestly, probably needs a slider sweeper to play off of this cutter a little more. Even a changeup, like the splitter's nice, but give him some other pitch. Like he really needs something else. I think he could be on the cusp of something, but again, does that really curb the command issues? The four-seam problem is command to a T. Like you look at the location and it's no shock that it's getting hit as hard as it is because the location's pretty bad on that pitch. And honestly, I don't love the cutter location that much either. Curveball just all over the place. No feel for it. Do I think the talent upside's still there? Yeah, absolutely. I think there's been some encouraging things this year. He's thrown innings. He's missed bats. I just hope that he can come around to it.
And even the splitter, he throws a thing in the zone more than you usually see.
Yeah.
With a splitter. And that's been the second most used offering overall this year. As you mentioned, it's shifted lately, but overall, he's done that thing 27.5% of the time. Cutter, about 22%. Curveball, 9%. The ingredients are there. He has the stuff. Like, we obviously, you don't have a sub one ERA over nine starts if you don't have the upside like Taj Bradley does. And only 23 years old as well. So I still think, is he going to be a fantasy ace? Maybe not. I think we may be guilty myself pushing him too high back during that stretch. Totally will admit that. But could he be a good SP2 for fantasy? I still think that guy is in there. A couple of tweaks here, maybe an arsenal change, but you got to get that fastball out of the middle of the plate because that has been getting hit way too hard. 274 batting average against, 521 slug this year. EV about 93 miles an hour. So just some things to work on, but I'd look to buy low here. Especially since he's been so bad to end the season. Like, again, ERA over nearly eight. So even a couple good starts, that ERA is going to be pretty high over the last almost half the season or so. So I'd be okay looking to buy lows. I think the perceived value has definitely cooled a bit over the last couple of months. Next one here, going to Cleveland with Gavin Williams. 14 starts this year after getting a little bit of a late start to the season. Has a 5.23 ERA, 1.39 whip, 9.7% walk rate, and a 24% strikeout rate. Another one where the stuff is really good, and we saw that in the minor leagues. Was one of the, every year when he was in the minor leagues, was among the minor league leaders in strikeout rate. Big guy, 6'6", 250, already 25 years old, which I thought he was only 23, like Bradley, but already 25 years old. But he's had a pretty up and down year, more so down than up. Last year, 3.29 ERA in his rookie year, with about a strikeout per inning. Where are you at in Gavin Williams these days, Chris? Because obviously the stuff is really good. You see that. You watch him pitch. He has two good breakers. You got the 97-mile-an-hour fastball, but just hasn't been able to put it all together yet.
Yeah, it's certainly a shell of who he was last year. He was very dominant in his rookie year, and he's come back and just really hasn't looked the part. Certainly some injuries have played a part here too. But you would hope that he would have been able to build on some innings at some point, build on some good starts here and there. And he just really hasn't done so. You look at the good starts that he has, and then it's just a stinker after that. You look at the right out of the All-Star break. He was pretty solid to end July. He had two starts of 9 and 8 strikeouts. And then he comes back out against Baltimore to start August. And he did strike out 8, but he did give up 6 earned in 4 innings. Had a good start to follow that, then a bad one. He had a good start against the Royals to begin September. And then he comes out and throws 2/3 of an inning with 5 earned in his next time out. It's like just so much inconsistency right now, start to start. It doesn't seem like he has a great feel for his arsenal, which is just a little bit unfortunate, just given the fact that he has got all the talent in the world. Look at the usage of his pitches. I do like he's throwing the slider more this month. I will say that he's up to 15% usage in September, but the four seam hasn't been a great offering. This is a theme here where you look, okay, location of the four seam. There's a lot of misses over the heart of the zone. And when that happens, the result's not good. Like very few can blow a fastball by a hitter middle in the majors. Just doesn't work. But right now, 22% whiff. It's okay for a four seam, but it's got a 2.93 batting average against. It's got a pretty high WOBA and X WOBA, pretty high X slug, and he's using it too much. Like, I want to see better sequencing here. I want to see him mix the usage a little bit. I think there's a buying opportunity on Gavin. Yep. I do think the cost is tanked enough where it's like, all right, you can buy back in. Because we know what he's capable of, and we saw that last year. Do I think he can get back to being a mid-3 ERA guy? Absolutely. So I think it's a good time to buy this offseason, see where it goes. He's 25 years old, so still younger. I think that it's a good opportunity for him.
Well, absolutely. And he's one, right? I tweeted out the other day that him and another guy we're talking about here in a few minutes are going to be my two biggest buying targets this offseason in Dynasty League. I'm trying to get him and this other guy everywhere I can. We'll see how many shares I can end up getting. But yeah, Williams, it's weird. Like you mentioned the slider being used more this month. His slider's actually taken a step back overall this year. So maybe this is him just trying to get a better feel for it here down the stretch and use it a little bit more, as the usage rate's only been, as he went down a lot this year, was 22% last year, 10.5% this year, but with a 280 betting average against, and you see the command of it, it's not great. There's a lot in right in the middle of the zone. Curveball's been all right with command. Four-seamer, as you mentioned, Chris, not the greatest. Curveball's still been good, batting average against 162, though the whiff rate's kind of been stagnant in the low 30s. Last year was 35.2%. Doesn't get a lot of ground balls, so there are some warts here. But again, this guy is, I think, has one of the highest upsides in all of baseball. I think he could be a top 15 arm if everything clicks. But more realistically, you're probably looking at a top 25, top 30 arm, SP2, SP3. Guy that I think the K rate's got to take up. It's been slightly above league average by about 1.5% or so each of his first 2 years. There's more K upside in the tank. I think he can get up in that 27-ish percent range. Maybe not 30, but definitely in that 27% range. And the walk rate's ticked down this year by 1%, which is nice to see. It's still a little high, but not detrimental right now. So yeah, I definitely would look to buy low on Williams. Like, he's got the stuff. It's just, like you mentioned, sequencing better. He's trying to use out of the cutter this year, about 10% usage rate on the cutter. So he's in four different velocity bands right now, which it was nice to see. So definitely has the ingredients here. I think he's just needs to put it all together in an effective way. I think he could still be pretty damn good. So, yeah, definitely looking to buy low on Gavin Williams this offseason. Next name here, Brandon Pfaadt, who started off pretty solid, but has ERA over 7 here over the last 2 months or so. You know, Brandon Pfaadt overall this season, 481 ERA in 29 starts with a 127 whip and 160 strikeouts in 166 and two-thirds innings. But again, lately, as I'm pulling up his last few starts here, see exactly what that ERA was. But yeah, especially 8 earned and 1 2/3 didn't help his last time out. But so let's look at right here his last 9 starts. He has 7.58 ERA, only a 393 FIP though in those 9 starts, but 340 batting average against and 49 walks. That should be 49 strikeouts to 12 walks in 46 and a third innings. Pfaadt, Chris, I feel like he's so up and down. He has this like several starts where he looks pretty damn good. You're like, all right, can he be like a top 30 to 40 arm? And then he throws up a stretch like this. Because even look at the stretch before this start, and he had four starts where he combined to give up 2 runs before this in late June and first few starts in July. He's a hard one for me to just value right now. I think I'm a little lower than most on him. But I don't know, is he a top 50 arm, top 70, better than top 50? I'm having a hard time valuing him. So where are you at on Brandon Pfaadt right now?
He's so tough because he had a stretch where he was looking really good, actually, even through early August, where July was really good month. And then up through that Colorado start, even though he did allow 4, and he struck out 11, and yep, it all went downhill after that, and it's been a nightmare. And the matchups, I mean, Miami should not have had issues there. The Mets are so hit or miss. Then you got the Dodgers, Houston, Milwaukee. But still, it's inexcusable to look and see the performance and what he's done. He can't say it's an innings thing because he throws innings every year. This is not a new thing for him to be at 167 innings. So we can't say, oh, he's tired or fatigued, because yeah, you look over the years and go back to 2022. He threw this many innings. He was a 167 in 2022. And then last year, he had plenty. He was right at the 160 mark. So it shouldn't be a fatigue thing. Overall this year, it's been good. Like, he's command, like, it's gotten better. He's walking less, throwing more strikes. He is missing bats, but it's inconsistent. Start to start is inconsistent with what you're going to get out of him. He's shown the flashes of being able to be a higher end strikeout guy, but yet here we are, and he's still sitting in 22% range, which not ideal. if you can get up to 25% range, yeah, I think there's something cooking here. Again, there is talent. The four seam's just not good. That's the issue here, is that fastball has never been good for him. It's always got hit around. It's just not an ideal pitch, and he still continues to lead with it. It's allowed a lot of home runs. Again, home runs have bit him the last several years. It's funny, actually. The sweeper has given up the most home runs of any of his pitches, which is bizarre.
I was just looking at that, too. Yeah.
I'd be curious to look at the locations here, because overall, the heat map looks pretty good. But again, it's like, that's weird to see 12 home runs on the sweeper, especially when you're running a 35% whiff rate on that pitch. Pretty low batting average against. Must be some meatballs. But again, it's overall, the location's pretty good on that offering. So I don't know. I'm looking for what happened here. It's looks like some inconsistent just starts. Command has gotten shaky at times. But at the end of the day, I think Fott's a fine like back end starting pitcher play. I don't think he could get to more. But right now, I look at him and say, okay, like he is what he is with a little bit more upside. Maybe you take a shot, but I'm not like rushing out to buy him. Like I'd much rather buy Gavin Williams than Brandon Fott.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I feel like he's going to settle in like the Brady Singer range. And I feel like Brady Singer's had pretty similar stats over the last couple of years to Brandon Fott as well. But yeah, it's not the last two we were talking about having a little bit of command issues. You look at the heat maps on Fott, and they're where you'd want them. Like you mentioned, the sweeper. And you don't think about your righties. It's down and away in that kind of lower corner out there. Four seam up in the zone, sinker down in the zone. Change up down and in, a little bit below the zone. Like most of these pitchers are right where you'd want them and have a pretty tight heat map. Obviously, Fott was one of the better command guys in the minor leagues as well. Never had higher walk rates, and he's been right around 5.5-6% in the major leagues. So he's carried that over. I still think he doesn't have quite as good stuff as the guys we've already talked about. Not as good stuff as like a Gavin Williams. But yeah, I think he could settle in as like a top 60-ish pitcher. I don't think he's gonna be top 50. He'll probably look like it at times, but yeah. Again, I think Brady Singer range, which is still a fine arm. Singer's definitely fantasy valuable for sure, and has stretches where he looks better, and so has Fott. So I think it's where he's at for me. But yeah, definitely would rather go after the other two right now as opposed to Brandon Fott. Next name on the list here. We got two more before we get into three up, three down. Next one's Max Meyer, who's just been up and down. Like hasn't just been bad lately. It's been really up and down all season. Had a few good starts earlier in the season, and then they sent him down to manage his innings, so they said, even though they were still pitching him in AAA, so it didn't make much sense there. But overall, 11 starts for Max Meyer, 568 ERA, and a 142 whip, 7.7% walk rate, which is exactly what he had last year, but only an 18.5% K rate. And Chris, outside of a high ground ball rate, there's not a lot on the Savant page to get excited about. He's even about 14% barrel rate and a 48% hard hit rate right now. Slider is his offering he goes to most, 40.7% of the time. Solid whiff rate, I guess, 34%. 240 batting average against, but a 471 slug. Four-seamer has been absolutely annihilated. 330 batting average against, 648 slug, and a 430 wOBA, a 94.9 mile an hour EV allowed on that. Changeup has been okay. Slug in the 600s, 233 batting average against, but a 600 slug. He's just getting hit way too hard. Even his best pitch is a 471 slug allowed. He's getting some ground balls, but outside of that, he's getting hit really hard right now. I wonder if they just messed him. They just didn't use him right this year. So I think there's still some upside. The stuff has been pretty good. I mean, slider obviously could be one of the better sliders in baseball. We saw that in the minor leagues as well. Four-seam velocity is solid, not great, but it's 94.1. Changeup has had some life at times too. So I still think the stuff is good, but I just don't like how they've handled him this year. But first year back from injury, maybe next year he can take a step forward. You think that's the case with Meyer? Are you looking to buy low right now, or are you a bit more concerned with him?
Man, I've said it a lot, but I do think they messed with his head when they sent him down early in the year after he had three really good starts to start the year, because his stuff should have dominated AAA, honestly, and it didn't. And he's come back up, and it's been a lot more bad than good to this point. You're right, a lot of hard contact. There's a lot of concerning things in the profile here. I don't know. Am I buying? Maybe in some cases, if you got him, I've got him in Highlander, just sit on him and hope that things get better. It is interesting. Four seam, again, there's been a common theme here between these guys. Four seam's terrible. Like, the location's terrible on this pitch. It's a 13.9% whiff rate on that pitch, and it's getting obliterated. A 648 slug against, you look at the heat map, it's just like, hey, I'm just throwing it dead down the middle. It's batting practice for you. I don't know. I look at this profile. I think there is some potential. Like, we were like, okay, Meyer really needs a consistent changeup. That was coming up, and he's throwing it more often. In August, he threw it 20% of the time. So it's like, there is some viability to that changeup, I think. It's semi-effective. I'd like to see it miss a little bit more bats. He's leading with the slider this month. Less four seams. That's a positive. But again, like, there's a good balance here somewhere in the pitch mix that could work. Right now, I'm not super excited about Max Meyer. I think that kind of the reliever risk that we've seen is coming into play. And I wonder, like, how long do they continue to run him out as a starter looking like this until they say, hey, we're going to try you in the bullpen. I don't think that's imminent, obviously, but it could be down the road.
Yeah, and that's how it's going to bend there. And something you mentioned even back when we were discussing this draft class a couple years ago is that there is some reliever risk here with Max Meyer. He needs a sinker in a bad way. He has a sinker, I guess. He's thrown it 20 times this year, but not really. But I think he really could benefit from having a second fastball. Use that one 15%, use the four-seamer a bit less there. I think that could really benefit him. But yeah, it's definitely been rough for Max Meyer this year. But given how low the price tag is, my own personal perceived value of him has dropped from over the last year a little bit, not like drastically, but I think the general perceived value has dropped a good amount. It could be just a low cost buy low right now in dynasty leagues. Obviously, it has the upside there, so you know, worth a shot. All right, last one here has been the worst of them all. We saved the worst for last with Bobby Miller. Could have a kind of a segment like this and not discuss Bobby Miller. He currently has an 8.17 ERA in 12 starts, and anybody that rosters him knows that they're sitting there. Yeah, I know he has an 8.17 ERA. He probably dropped him by this point. But yeah, it's not a lot to get excited about here in the profile either. It's like always been super unlucky or anything like that. No, that has not been the case. As the xERA is a run lower, but it's still 7.06. Look across the board. There's a lot of blue. Fastball velo, yep, 95th percentile. Extension, 83rd percentile. Outside of that, a lot of blue balls here. Quality of contact will start there. 12.3% barrel, 91.7 average exit velocity, 48.5% hard hit rate. Walk rate's almost doubled to 11.9%. K rate's dropped. XBAX slugs all super high. I mean, he's still nasty, Chris. Like, you watch Bobby Miller pitch, it's 97.5 mile an hour fastball. You get the changeup around 86, curveball around 80, the sinker at 97, slider at 88. He's in four different velocity bands there, but everything is, besides the changeup, has been really good. 111 batting average against, 200 slug, 40% whiff rate. Phenomenal. Everything else, wet, steaming pile of dung. 316 batting average against on the four-seamer, 360 on the curve, 440 on the sinker, 300 on the slider. All the slugs are 560 or higher. It's just not good. But I want to buy low so bad, Chris. This is the other guy. That's what I was alluding to earlier. It's going to be Gavin Williams and Bobby Miller are the two, because yeah, there's no metric here that's, oh, yeah, boom, that makes me want to buy low. But it's just the stuff. It's so damn good. You look at the similar pitchers to Bobby Miller based on velo and movement. One's Gavin Williams. You got Jared Jones, Garrett Cole, Luis Medina, and Casey Mize. What is Casey Mize doing in there? Is that an error? Okay, I've seen Casey Mize pitch, and his stuff is nowhere near, even when he was the number one pick, nowhere near Bobby Miller. But anyway, but yeah, I'm looking to buy low on Bobby Miller. Yeah, it's really been bad this year, but I think that's driven the value way down, perceived value, I should say, way down, price tag, cost, all that's gone way down to the point where he's a great buy. Yeah, he's looked like crap, but this is still a really talented arm, and that's what I'm holding on to here.
Yeah, the upside's so tremendous, and we saw that last year. We saw the potential. I think they're still like SP2 upside. But the problem is, I don't think he's fully healthy.
Yeah.
Pure speculation. But I look at it and, okay, there's something not right here for sure with Miller. And it's evident just based on the results and, you know, how things have gone this year, I think. And you look and there's been a lot of issues across the board, as you alluded to, Arsenal-wise. Changeup's been a really good offering for him this year, though. The curveball has been inconsistent, but it has missed bats. The four-seam's been much more of an issue than it was last year. It is interesting because last year it was about 30% four-seam, 20% sinker. This year it's 40% four-seam and about 11, 12% sinker. So that's interesting development to see. The changeup usage is up about 4 and 5%. The curveball usage about the same. So it's interesting to see. I look at the profile. I still see some things to this week is prime bounce back territory for him. If he can do it, it's Colorado, it's Miami. Like, this is the best chance he's going to have to rebound and finish the year strong. I'm not sure it happens. Just again, I still think he's hurt, but that's my kind of read into the situation. The command's gone. He has no feel for the strike zone. So all that kind of leads me to think that there's some, you know, more underlying issues. We know he was hurt earlier in the year, but I still think there's some, you know, underlying injury concerns right now, just based on, you know, everything you're looking at. The fact he's in the zone less, his zone contact is, he's getting much less chase out of the zone. He's allowing way more contact. So, like, those things are a bit of concern and leads me to some questions about the health of Bobby Miller. Hopefully, we look back at this next year and he's good and he's back in business on what I think he can be. So, yeah, I'm interested in buying for sure.
It's 100% changeups rest of the way. The only pitches working for him right now. Might even be better, even if they know it's coming, might even be better results than what he has now. But yeah, like I wrote in my weekly pitching planner for FTN that I do every Sunday morning. Yeah, he's got Colorado outside of Coors and then Miami. So I'm like, if this isn't the week, then I don't know when the week is. And this might just be completely lost season, depending on whoever he's facing. It doesn't even matter if it's a bad offense or not. But all right, so Chris, rank these five, let's say 2 years from now, rank these five and where you think they'll be in our dynasty rankings. I will go, weird enough, I still think it's going to be Bobby Miller, then Taj, then Gavin Williams. Oh, the last two are pretty interchangeable. Meyer more upside, Fott's a bit safer. I'll say Meyer, Fott, but those two are a little bit below Miller, Bradley, and Williams to me. But how do you rank these five?
Probably go Miller, Williams, Bradley, Fottmeyer.
So we got the same top three to switch. Yeah, Bradley and Williams I'm iffy on, but I still feel good about putting Miller one there. I think he's at the highest upside. I've seen Miller a few times, both out in the AFL and in a major league start in Philadelphia a couple years ago. Or was that last year? I can't remember. But yeah, still have a lot of confidence in Miller, but yeah, this has been a pretty tough year for him. All right, let's move over to three up, three down. We get a six-pack of hitting prospects, starting with a guy that got called up on Monday, Nick York, former Red Sox prospect, currently now with the Pittsburgh Pirates, went over in exchange for Quinn Priester at the deadline, and he's been pretty damn good for AAA Indianapolis since the trade, slashing 355, 431, 507, only two home runs, but 17 doubles in 40 games, so still smacking a lot of doubles. And you look at under the hood, he doesn't wow you, but it's pretty solid in terms of contact and quality of contact. He can draw walks. I was never super high on Nick York, but that didn't mean he was a bad prospect. He just didn't have the upside that a lot of the other names in the Sox system did, especially for those middle infielders. And he could be a guy that hits a solid average, maybe 15 homer guy, gives you a little bit of speed as well. Not a burner, but he can run a little bit. So give you a little bit of everything across the board without harming you anywhere. Yeah, maybe he fits into Pittsburgh's plans full time next year. There's not a lot of other options to take that spot from him. So I think there's some intrigue here, especially in deeper leagues.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. He is a different player than he was last year. Don't know if it's just health related or not, but there's been some major jumps in exit velocity data that's been really encouraging. I think it's about a 3 mile an hour jump on 2 to 3 mile an hour jump on his 9th percentile exit velocity. That's up in the 105 half range. His average exit velocity, 91 miles an hour. Still making good contact. Doesn't chase all that often. I think that York is certainly a viable. I'm not gonna say he's me like a flashy fantasy type player, but there is certainly some viability here. I think that suddenly York is much more relevant than he was, and somebody that we've both seen a lot, and I've liked him and didn't like him. He's had an up and down career, a lot of swing changes. Hopefully he's found his groove. I thought it was actually a pretty good trade for both parties to for York to go over to Pittsburgh and then to bring Quinn Priester over to Boston. Made a lot of sense. Yeah, I'm excited about York. I don't think he's like a superstar, but I think he can be at second base. Like, the floor's pretty low to be fantasy relevant. I think he can be a pretty solid player.
Yeah, I think that was a decent deal for both teams for sure. We had, obviously, Red Sox have a ton of infield depth, especially at the middle infield spots. And I'm not a big Priester guy, but I was like, hey, maybe Andrew Bailey and company can work with him, find something. He's already shown flashes in AAA and just give us more pitching depth, which we've lacked here in Boston lately. So, yeah, I think that was a decent deal. I wonder, like, where does Nick York settle in? He has played all over the field. I mean, look at, especially with Worcester, it was supposed to be just second base and left. But look at the game log here since he went to Indianapolis. It's almost like he hasn't played the same spot two games in a row. And if he does, it's rare. It's second base, left field, right field, center field, third base, back to second base, center field, shortstop. Like, Nick York is not a shortstop. But I don't know why he's even been playing there. But I don't know what his eligibility is going to be. Probably multi-position eligibility. Just don't know what positions. I think second base will factor in. Maybe some outfield, maybe even some third. I have no idea. But I definitely think there's some decent deep league value there. And he could be a decent hitter. Not going to wow you, but definitely a major league hitter. Our first down, going to Milwaukee with Brock Wilkin, who I think we had as a down maybe a month and a half ago or so. And unfortunately hasn't gotten any better with Brock Wilkin. You know, overall, the season is hitting right at the Mendoza line, 200 on the nose. And you look at in August, 105, 261, 158 slash in 21 games. In September so far, 100, 250, 300, 4 for 4. Does have two home runs this month, but only four hits in 40 at-bats over 12 games. Chris, like, and me especially, I know I was a huge Brock Wilkin guy. I know I ranked him super high. We had a lot of those episodes where projecting out the future. I had him highly ranked there. It's the power. I'm still a believer. I'm wondering how much that fastball to the face affected him earlier in the season. And if it's still maybe a mental thing. I don't know. Hard to say. I'm speculating, and I hate doing that. But power, obviously, is there. It's huge power. I'm a believer in those changes he made last year in his final season at Wake Forest. Higher contact, higher walk, less strikeouts. I don't think that was a fluke. Maybe it was. I don't know. But I'm looking to buy low because the value, the perceived value is so low on him right now. And maybe I'm, it's fool's gold and I shouldn't get my hopes up with him. But I still think there's a good hitter to be had here. But I don't know. Do you share my optimism here with Brock Wilkin?
Yeah, it's really interesting just to look at the profile. It's been a weird year for sure. And that's putting it nicely. He has run really low BABIP, so obviously that's worth looking at. That's been a little bit of a drain. He's struck out a lot. There's been no denying that he's had a lot of strikeouts. That's been the question for since he was drafted. Would he make enough contact? And he had shown some pretty good contact skills last year upon his debut. And then this year, could it have been that shot to the face? Yeah, that could have absolutely affected it. So I'm kind of curious. Do you remember when exactly that happened? Probably found the gap in the game logs.
I'm not. I saw his game logs up. Let's see. He went, must have been April 11th. Yeah, because he has a And he came back quicker than everyone thought. But yeah, he has about a 3-week gap from April 11th to May 4th.
Yeah, so there's no comparing before and after, given that it was early in the year when it happened. But yeah, it's just not been a pretty year for him. The contact has turned in the wrong direction all year. Look at the rolling contact rates and the strikeout rate. Like, they've both gone in the wrong direction as the year has moved on. So keep an eye out here. Do I still like the talent? Yeah. Do I still think there's potential? I do. Power's definitely there. No denying that. But I think we need to, it's going to be, 2025 is going to be a show me year. Wilkins Young, considering he was drafted last summer, he's a college guy. He's just turned 22. So still on the younger side, but really need to see something out of him in 2025, or all hope might be lost.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I say that a lot. It's I use the term make or break, and maybe that's not the right terminology, but it definitely is show me year. And I like that terminology better, because if he doesn't have a good year in 2025, doesn't mean he's completely written off. But you know, is he going to be this big time power bat and potential middle of the order thumper at the major league level that we think he can be? Or is that really not the high likelihood outcome for him anymore? So you definitely want to see full offseason of him, healthy, no fastballs to the face here, and see what he can do in 2025. Our second up, we're going out to Oakland with Colby Thomas, who probably would have had a chance to debut this year if their outfield didn't get pretty damn good over the second half of the season. But look at Colby Thomas. He's been pretty damn good all year, racking up the extra base hits. In September so far, 286, 346, 735, five doubles, five home runs, and a steal in 13 games. Overall, he's got 78 extra base hits, 43 doubles, five triples, 30 home runs, also 15 steals, 274, 339, 565 slash line. Obviously, nice little power speed blend there. You know, a little bit of an aggressive approach. Walk rate's a bit lower. K rate, even right now, he has 19 Ks in these 13 games in September. So that K rate can tend to be a little bit higher at times, a little bit lower walk rates. So that is a little bit of a concern, not massive, but yeah, definitely a fun player here, potential fantasy friendly profile, and hopefully gets a shot for the Athletics next season. But yeah, I'm a pretty big fan of Colby Thomas. I think he's getting undervalued in rankings as well.
Yeah, there are some underlying whiff issues. There's some chase. He's aggressive, no doubt, but we are talking about somebody that had 63 extra base hits last year, if I'm not mistaken, and now leads by a wide margin in extra base hits this year, has 76, which is nuts. I actually have more than that now. I tweeted that out on September 13th, so there's a chance that he has even more than that. The exit velocities are good, high-end power, hits the ball in the air often, pulls it often. It's just a good rounded profile with speed. And I really think that you're right. I think there's a big power speed bat that could be had next year playing games in Sacramento. That bodes really well for him not having to play in Oakland. And I think there's probably a spot for him pretty soon. Maybe not this year, but I do think that we see him up early next year and he makes a pretty big impact. So I think you have to watch the average, the contact skills, but when you get that kind of power speed, like, you can live with slightly below average contact.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's going to be a fun – this lineup is, like, sneaky getting fun, I mean, a little bit. Obviously, Rooker and Butler have been phenomenal second half of the year. Who would have thought the Oakland's lineup wouldn't be trash at any point this year? Not me. I thought it was going to be trash. I thought they were going to have a season like the White Sox are having. But, yeah, definitely – I think they had, like, the – third or fourth most wins since the All-Star break. At least they did as of a few weeks ago. But yeah, Colby Thomas definitely could add to that mix next year. And definitely a fun fantasy profile. Next one, I mean, this one we put in the down slot, but it's really an up and a down. It's hard to really describe it, but it's Spencer Jones. Every time I look at it, it's like, all right, like the average is high and there's some power speed. Every few weeks we look at this, but then the K rate's like 40%. And that's exactly what we're looking at here again with Spencer Jones. So if you look at the month of September, he's got three home runs and a steal. He's also got five doubles, two triples, so 10 extra base hits in 14 games this month. 264, 328, 604 slash, solid there, and it was pretty good the second half of August as well. So if you go back to the 17th of August here, 326, 379, 600 with 17 extra base hits in 25 games and four steals. But at the same time, even when he's hitting 326 over that 25-game period, he still has a strikeout rate of 35.9%, and it hasn't really gotten better. Look at in May, strikeout rate was 38.5%. In June, 36.4%. In July, 40.7%. And in August, 38.2%. And then so far here in September, which has actually been his best month since April, still 34.5%. So, Chris Jones, I've seen Jones double A. He hit a massive home run. He's also struck. I saw him strike out a ton, even in my live looks. I'm having a hard time ranking him. He's been kicking around 100 because obviously the upside is enormous, but he also has 200 strikeouts this year, which set the Yankees minor league record, which is that's saying something. How long? 200 strikeouts in 122 games. Massive red flag there. So I don't know. Are you looking to invest? I don't know. This is just such a big profile in a lot of ways. Big upside, but that big K rate is just, I think it's too much for me to want to invest in.
Yeah, I'm not interested. Tools are fun, but you got to make contact, and the contact rate has progressively gotten worse, which is weird to kind of look at and see. It's at 60% for the year, and it's just turned downward all year. And even in the, he's looked much better since the All-Star break. Numbers look pretty good. It's dropped like 58%. It's so weird. When you swing and miss that much against double-A pitching, it's just going to be really hard to make it work. I don't know. You can dream on the upside, but I'm just not interested in Spencer Jones. He's a great athlete. He moves well. He's obviously got big power. There's no denying that, but I'm just not interested at this point, just given the amount of whiff in the game. I don't want to play with that.
Chris, I want you to guess what Spencer Jones' BABIP is this year.
380?
401.
Nice. Figured it was high, just given all things considered kind of thing. So that's, yeah. I'd bet that's one of the higher BABIPs of qualified prospects.
It has to be. If it's not number one, it's got to be in the top few percent of minor league hitters for sure. That's, you don't see a BABIP over 400 that often. And yeah, he's that. I had a feeling again. I was like, it's got to be at least 370 plus. And yeah, I was like, let me go peek over at Fangraphs real quick. Yeah, 401.
Yeah, Henry Bolte is 415 of non-DSL or complex hitters. Like, he's the only other one that's that high.
Oh, geez, DSL BABIPs. I don't even want to think about that. That's
no. Yeah, looking at some 481s. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, good old DSL. yeah, it's like Jones. Like, I want to believe, and like I said, I've seen him hit a massive home run. Like, I even as a Red Sox fan, he's a fun player to watch. But yeah, you can't ignore that strikeout. But another guy with massive power that does not have a massive strikeout rate, Mr. Bryce Eldridge with the San Francisco Giants. Still 19 years old, won't turn 20 until after the season and in mid-October on the 20th. He's up to AAA already. Started the year in low A. And he was there for a good, you know, almost 3 months. Then it was in high A for a couple of months. Quick little layover in double A for a week and a half. And then up to AAA over the last couple of games here. And he's just been hitting along the way. Look at since July 30th. I mean, he was good all year, but really turned it on over the last couple of months. Last 39 games, he's slashing 349, 435, 685, 10 doubles, 12 home runs, 25 walks to 37 strikeouts in those 39 games. That is a 14.1% walk rate. And only a 20.9% strikeout rate. It doesn't have the speed that Jones has, but big power. Might be the best power hitter they've developed in quite some time. And 30-plus home runs easily looks possible, 35 maybe. And a guy that could hit for a solid average with a good OBP as well. So I think he's, you know, a good middle-of-the-order masher for them. And maybe even a guy we see up. I don't think he's up early next year, but maybe second half of next year they give him the call. Maybe sooner than that. Maybe he's up earlier next year, but he's moved into, you know, elite territory here and definitely knocking on the door for top 10 overall prospect status.
Yeah, it's been quite a season for him. Played at every level now that he's in AAA, which is crazy. It's big pop. There's no questioning that. When you look at the frame, you see the swing. It's a 107.5 ninth percentile EV. That's for his age. He's 19. Like, it's a very tip top of that, and that's already, you know, 65 grade for MLB standards. So it's really good power. Contact, I think, is still a question. He's shown ups and downs, a lot of inconsistencies with contact. He's made it work. I will say, like, it's been pointed out to me, somebody in the Discord pointed out that his splits are really concerning against righty-lefty. Against lefties this year, it's a 591 OPS, and that's across 121 plate appearances, 209, 273, 318. Just three of his home runs have come against lefties. That's a little bit concerning. You look at first base only, platoon. Again, he's 19, so I don't want to panic about that. He's obviously mashed righty. He's a 1009 OPS, which is pretty impressive. I don't want to panic about that, but that is something that gives me a little bit of pause. I do think that's something that can come with time. That's a young lefty. Maybe he figures that out. All he needs to do is like ops like 650 against lefties, maybe closer to 700 and he'll be fine. Stay in the lineup every day. But yeah, no denying the power, no denying what he's done. We'll see him out in the Arizona Fall League, which will be fun. Looking forward to that. He may win MVP, and he's probably going to win the home run derby.
Yeah, no, that it sucks that we're gonna not be able to see that home run derby this year, but yeah, Eldridge, some of the best raw power in the minor leagues right now, and definitely got that. Yeah, if you can just, you don't have to be a standout on both sides. If you're just passable against lefties, that'll be fine for the way he mashes righties. So yeah, Eldridge has had a phenomenal year and shot up prospect rankings. Last one here, we got Xavier Isaac, a guy that many consider probably the number one first base prospect, but now that's Eldridge's title for most people. Isaac has really been, the last few months, not great. Look at May and June, he was just ridiculous. In the May, 337, 420, 674 slash, 9 doubles, 6 home runs in 25 games. In June, 327, 426, 558 in 14 games. And then July, you know, still okay, 250, 365, 462. August, 200, 323, 325. And then September, 241, 405, 414 so far. But just a lot of strikeouts with him. Look at going back to, let's see here, June 12th. So we're looking at a 50-game sample size. He has 85 strikeouts in those 50 games, which is a 39.7% strikeout rate. Still has a walk rate well over 10% in that time. Only 6 home runs the last 50 games. So just really some struggles here that's popped up here. Big strikeout rate over the second half of the season. What do you think of that, Chris? Isaac was so good in the first half, and then second half, it's just been a completely different story with him.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the lingering wrist injury.
Yes.
He's been playing through. It was the numbers pre-post injury are pretty stark difference. And yeah, he missed pretty substantial time. I saw him early in the year, and I saw him miss a series out of the All-Star break too when Bowling Green was here. But again, through June 13th, you're looking at a pretty impressive 310, 395, 579 slash. Strikeouts were too much then, 28%. But 12 home runs, 15 doubles over that span. Contact rates were pretty good. It wasn't ideal, but they were much better than they are now. And now the contact rates dipped sub 60%, and it's sub 70% in zone, which is a major issue. And since he came back from the injury, the overall contact rate's like 55%, which is horrific. And that's not who Xavier Isaac is or has been. I just think that there's still some underlying injury concerns with the wrist. It's bizarre, though, because he still put up some pretty gaudy exit velocities, like even down the stretch. So it's like, okay, if he can get to like 112s, then yeah, how's this affecting the contact? And maybe the timing's just off a bit. I'm not completely sure, but I do think that there is still some underlying injury concerns here. And do I think he'll be fine long term? Yeah, I just think he's playing through an injury, honestly.
Yeah, no, that definitely coincides, like you said, with the injury before. He was really good. After, he's not so good. I think I'm not completely giving him a free pass, but definitely talking up, like, maybe this is a little bit injury related, and that's why I haven't dropped him a ton down my rankings. He has dropped a decent. I mean, he was in like the 15 range. I think now he's more like the mid to late 20s for me. Still one of the higher ranked prospects. Still absolutely top 50, no doubt about it in my mind. Maybe he's a nice little buy low this offseason. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again in a couple of days with some Dynasty risers and fallers. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.